I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and driving about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog that dies. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking inside me, running down with life, I'm fighting in a far and dive deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. I was reading a paper earlier today, and came across a not unexpected little article, which told me Labour is in trouble again in Britain. I'd say Labour is in trouble, but not necessarily for the reasons it ought to be in trouble. This is the latest. Jeremy Corbyn is under fire because one of his close advisors said recently that the Israeli embassy had been orchestrating an attack on some of the Labour members. Because of Labour's stand against Israel, there is considerable unhappiness on the part of the Israeli lobby with the Labour Party. Well, Mr. Corbyn's assistant said that this had been orchestrated by the Israeli embassy. Well, that was anti-Semitism. And just to mention it was anti-Semitism. Well, my only question is this: is that anti-Semitism? The only question that really needs concern us is it true? I have no way of knowing whether it's true or not. But I noticed that the people crying anti-Semitism didn't say, oh, it's false, absolutely false. I mean, the truth is something else. Well, okay, if that were the issue, fair enough. Make the point. But to simply try to squelch debate by hollering anti-Semitism is wrong. And unfortunately, all too often, that is what the Zionist lobby does. You're supposed to shut up, you see. And if you criticize Israel or criticize a Jew, then that's anti-Semitic. What we have got to, and you know, this is going to be a battle we're going to have to fight. We've got to try to remove the sting from those terms. So that's name calling. I think the fellow has had to resign. The Israeli lobby wanted him immediately expelled. A group of rabbis wanted him expelled. You know, if there is a concern about anti-Semitism, you know, perhaps the ill feeling sometimes may be directed at Jews may have something to do with the way they behave. I mean, the nerve of this group of rabbis saying to a political party that they should expel or get rid of somebody. I mean, it's not their business. I mean, what would be the response, for instance, if a political party were to say to the council rabbis that they should get rid of some rabbi or fire some rabbi or whatever? It would be considered to be outrageous interference in their internal affairs, as indeed it would be. But I think, you know, what's true for one has got to be true for others. Well, here's a very interesting commentary on globalization. And it's 30 questions globalists can't answer. Or maybe we should say 30 questions globalists may not want to answer. And I may again be having problems with my internet connection, so I'm going to switch computers here, and if you'll just bear with me. But this is a very perceptive young lady, and talking about some of the questions that globalists are just apparently not prepared to answer. And we're so told globalism is such a wonderful thing. We do have our problems sometimes. So this is about globalism and 30 questions that globalists are not prepared to answer. And I can see why. Had an interesting meeting this afternoon with a potential political prisoner, Bill Watcott. He's in fact been in jail before for the nonviolent expression of his political views on abortion. And we had a good talk with him and Dr. James Sears today about where we go from here on a couple of the important free speech battles that are coming up. And I think we might just be ready to go with that. 30 questions globalists can't answer.
What's up, guys? It's Rocco. As you know, I'm a mechanic. Wrenched on cars and bike my whole life.
Hey guys, welcome to the video. I hope you're all having a lovely bank holiday weekend. So anybody who knows me from Twitter will know that my mentions are always full of tweets from really aggressive and emotional, usually left-wing males, but sometimes females as well. And sometimes I talk to them, sometimes I can't be bothered because they're not always intellectually honest. But one thing that I've noticed is that when I ask people a question, there's either a lot of hypocrisy in the way that they answer, or they just can't answer it. They'll either get aggressive and abusive, or they'll block me and they'll drop out of the conversation. So what I've started doing is making a list of questions that progressive left-wing types on Twitter, the ones that I have experience with anyway, aren't able to answer. And I've collected 30 questions, so I've decided to put them into a video. Now, you, the viewer of this video, might be able to answer all these questions, and if that's the case, then thank you, and I congratulate you for being consistent with your morals and your way of thinking. But these are genuine things that people on Twitter have said to me. So they've said something in one tweet, and then a little bit later they've said something else, and it's like, well, you can't have both of those things because they're opposing views. So without further ado, let's begin. If we're all just the same, then how is diversity our strength? If diversity is a strength, then how is it also a punishment for colonialism? If immigration is our punishment for colonialism, then are you saying that the presence of immigrants here is bad? Why is multiculturalism a good thing when it's imposed on white people, and a bad thing when it's imposed on other indigenous peoples? Why is white pride condemned, but pride of any other ethnic group is celebrated? If there's no such thing as race, then how is there such a thing as white privilege? If race is just a social construct, then how do they know that we've always been a nation of immigrants because we dug up black skeletons during the Roman occupation of Britain? If there's no such thing as British culture, then how is Ramadan now part of British culture? If America belongs to the American Indians because they were there first, does Britain belong to the Britons because we were here first? Why are white Americans told to go back to Europe where they came from because America belongs to the American Indians, while Europeans are told that we all came from Africa so our nations aren't ours? If Africans are allowed to live in Britain because of the British Empire, does this mean that anybody can go live in any country that they've previously been invaded by? Or could it just be that a falsified narrative of the British Empire is used to guilt white people into opening up their borders and is manipulated by people who want to live in a first world civilization so that they don't have to create their own? If we were so oppressive and awful to your ancestors, then why did you want to come and live with us? If you demand reparations for slavery, then how much are you going to demand from the black slavers who sold your ancestors to us? If you're so concerned about slavery, then where's your concern for the 40 million plus people who are slaves today? Or do they not matter because they're not held captive by white people? If you care about the well-being of people from other nations, then why are you happy to take their best doctors, scientists and engineers? If we needed immigrants to rebuild Britain after World War II, then why didn't we need immigrants after World War I, when more than double the amount of people died? If it's because Britain was damaged after the Blitz, then why didn't Japan need immigrants after Hiroshima and Nagasaki? If we needed immigrants to rebuild Britain after World War II, then why did our government fund the £10 POM scheme, which encouraged 1.5 million Britons to move to Australia? If David Lammy is as British as us, then shouldn't he apologise for slavery and colonialism too? If Afua Hirsch is as British as us, then why did she write in her book, Brit-ish, that she left Britain to leave being British? Why do the British only exist when you're blaming us for colonialism? Why can't we feel proud of our ancestors, but we can feel guilty for colonialism? Why can't I feel proud of my ancestors, but you can feel victimised because of yours? If Britons are collectively guilty for colonialism, then are Muslims collectively guilty for the Islamic invasions of Europe? Why are all nationalists held responsible for the acts of some nationalists, but all Muslims aren't held responsible for terrorist attacks committed by Muslims? Why do people say, well, if we weren't bombing their countries after a Muslim commits a terror attack, but they don't say, well, if they weren't invading our continents after a white person attacks a Muslim? Why should we only carry on as normal and not look back in anger after an Islamic terror attack? Why are the people who claim to care the most about the environment also the people who want the most immigration, which increases our population and has a negative impact on the environment? How can you call yourself a feminist when you ignore violence towards women with different ideologies, teenage girls in Rotherham and 8-year-old girls at pop concerts? Why is it open borders for Europe but not open borders for Israel? Why are the group who claim to be the most oppressed also the group with the power to silence you? And that's it, 30 questions. So thank you for listening. If you can think of any more questions that you've asked that people haven't been able to answer, feel free to put them in the comments below because I'd love to read them. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
That's Laura Tyler. That's a very, very interesting questions. Questions that are well worth asking. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Here's a letter to me from my good friend, the voice of the working man, citizen journalist Brad Love, who's also been to jail for the nonviolent expression of his political views. Yeah, yes, here in Canada, not in North Korea. And Brad writes, last week in my old neighborhood, this is in Fort McMurray, which was once a thriving town in the oil, or city in the oil patch up in northern Alberta in the tar sands area, now going through very, very bad times because of the dip in oil prices, but also the refusal or inability, depending on which government we're blaming, in Canada to build the necessary pipelines to get the oil to market. Anyway, last week in my old neighborhood, a home owner torched his house and got caught doing it. It was a crap hole that never burned down in the fire 2016. That was a big forest fire that did a lot of damage, including burning parts of Fort McMurray. But it's sure gone now. So is he. And he references a news clipping that he sent me. 214 townhouses still not completed. And since they've been sitting exposed for so long, they may well need tearing down. All those people and families got screwed. That's it. He said that we have McDonald's in town, all owned by a Dutch or German guy, who is proud of the fact he brings in boatloads of Filipinos to work in his business. And, you know, imagine the way our own people are betrayed. Many live in foreigners live in subsidized housing that would never qualify Filipino labor who then occupy the homes that they'll never have access to. Pure socialism, brother. If I've phoned a city councilor or media and complained about this, they never get what I'm talking about. And A and B, they call the cops on me because I have either frightened or offended them. Yep, it is just that stupid here. And he's right. He is being called, the police are being called several times by newspapers or even politicians because he has called them up and challenged them. And see, for a while he was under a ruthless court prohibition as part of his parole conditions he was enjoined not to contact any media, any police, any political association, I mean, or religious association. He was gagged in a way that you might expect, perhaps, in some place like a communist North Korea. And we live increasingly in a society of utter snowflakes. you know a snowflake is, it's very delicate and will melt. You know, if it lands on your hand, it's likely to melt. Well, we have become a nation of wimps and wankers, or snowflakes, people who can't take criticism, or their ideas, I'm uncomfortable, it's outside my comfort zone. Well, you know, if you're an adult, that may be something that if a person's a kindergarten child, adults or teachers may want to protect them from certain things. For instance, like graphic raw sex ed that's being imposed on kids in the province of Ontario by the previous lesbian premier in this province. Yeah, because you want to protect their delicacy and their innocence up to a certain point. But adults, protect them from ideas or protect them from a challenge. And Brad is kind of an abrasive guy, but he would call up the newspapers and demand to know, well, why haven't you covered this? They feel uncomfortable. Well, too bad. They're in the media. They're in the public eye, and they wouldn't hesitate, you know, to use Brad Love's name or to shine the spotlight on him. Now, it would be different than if Brad was calling up some poor old lady who has never done anything and is not in the public eye and demanding, why hasn't the newspaper covered this or that? Anyway, that's just the way it is. And increasingly, our society gives, I would think, far and away undue notice and protection to snowflakes. Now we now have or at least privileged people have a right not to feel, I feel uneasy, I feel threatened. No, what you feel is irrelevant. And I say that quite deliberately. I can't be responsible for your feelings because feelings are subjective. They can be influenced by all sorts of factors, some of which I have no control and about which I may have no knowledge at all. If you feel threatened because I said to you, I'm going to come over to your place and I'm going to take a hammer, I'm going to hit you on the head. Okay, that is a threat. And that's a clear threat. And I should be held responsible for that. And you may have a right to be afraid. And in fact, that might be the normal reaction, again, depending on how much credibility you give to the person making that statement. But yes, but I should not be held accountable if you happen to feel worried about something, or you feel uneasy, or I made you feel insecure. Well, frankly, I can't be held, or should not be held, responsible for your feelings. We are, regrettably, moving in a different direction, though, in our society today. Well, anyway, Brad's letter continues. Homes and businesses here routinely, here continue to go bankrupt, unsold, or outright abandoned. And Jason Kenney, he's the new elected United Conservative Party Premier of Alberta, won't be able to fix such a reality. If you think about it, everyone who owns a townhouse that is in that incomplete complex could probably move into an abandoned home tomorrow, free of charge, and no one would be put out or inconvenienced. Hell, most wouldn't even notice. But this is too simple. Tuesday evening city council meetings could address this, but they're far too busy apologizing to homosexuals, natives, street people, women's groups, etc., to be of any real use. It's all a joke and a bad one. Ironically, a city councilor lives in the same neighborhood as this townhouse complex wreck, and despite such visible hardships, he proposes to spend $100 million in closing an outdoor sports facility called Shell Place, after the oil company, so it can be used all year long. Used for what? In such a dull town, no one knows. No one calls him out on this, though. Of course, if Brad did, he would probably say, I feel uncomfortable. Or people feel uncomfortable. You're a politician. Maybe it's part of the life. That's especially part of the life of a politician. And I think Harry Truman once said, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. A lesson that a lot of our politicians today could well learn. This is really disgusting. So many public people are so fragile, or I would say would like to pretend to be so fragile, because there's nobody to call them on it, and because they actually get attention for this sort of thing. It's also an excellent way to weasel out of responsibilities. When Brad's letter continues, I know a 67-year-old guy who's been living at the Salvation Army shelter for over 4 years. I know another guy, a heavy equipment operator from British Columbia, who comes here, stays at the same shelter for free while he looks for work. He's Polish, and he was in Europe for the winter, visiting his family. Yet when he returns here, he's hopelessly broke. He repeats this cycle yearly. You'd think the Salvation Army, who received $190,000 from the city council as a top-up for the shelter, would give such perpetual shelter users the boot. But they don't. Makes you wonder, doesn't it? Despite the downturn here, that they're building a 14-story condo hotel that's a high-rise in downtown, in the sleazy part of town where streets are narrow, homeless people and vacant homes, and there's an absurd where a two high-rise facility of third worlders is close by. No one can figure out who is doing this nonsense or why. As well, it's being built over top of a four-story ironwork that started off as a condo and then was abandoned. I mean, the city is a mess. Abandoned 9 years ago. Now, anyone knows that when structural steel is left in the elements for years, it's no longer safe. to use or build over. Lo and behold, these new owners of this Taj Mahal monstrosity did just that, and no one altered uttered a peep. Every day, I shake my head over what I see and witness in this once prosperous town, and yet I seem to be the only one catching on. The natives, the Newfies, the Negroes, the Filipinos, and the Muslims who suck my social network dry are oblivious to such a calamity, as are the frightened white people. Yes, makes you wonder, eh, Paul? Brad is a shrewd observer, and he has paid quite a price in his life for speaking honestly. And you know, I've mentioned this before, but it's a thought that continues to niggle away at the back of my mind, and it's this. Brad is an outspoken guy. Brad has only a high school education, but he's a great reader. He is constantly reading books. He reads the newspapers. He's concerned. Now, when I was in high school, when I was in grade 10, we had a one-hour course each week in civics. We worked our way through a little booklet called How We Are Governed. Today we might say how we are misgoverned, but anyway, how we are governed. And the idea was, we learned about the setup of this country, that we're a constitutional monarchy, we have an elected House of Commons, we have an appointed Senate, and how the Senate was appointed to provide regional representation, how we have provinces and municipalities, and how we elect the people who govern us there. And then beyond that, beyond just the lay of the land, so to speak, we learned about the responsibilities of citizenship. Notice I said, not the rights, those two, of course, but responsibilities. And one of the things I always remember is that we were told that as a citizen, we had a duty to inform ourselves and to be involved. You know, unlike the citizens of many countries in this world, where the citizens, where they have no say, with representative government, we do have a say. Well, we have the opportunity to have a say. At the ballot box, of course, first of all, but in a more subtle way, by actively engaging in the political process. And that is more than just voting, you know, once every 4 years or, you know, whenever the elections are. It means advised to join a political party. First of all, inform ourselves. And then we're advised to join a political party or a movement or a group. The idea being that we should participate. We should inform ourselves of the issue, on the issues of the day, and then act upon it. Act upon that information. That's not just in a, you know, through most of my adult life, I've run into people who are proudly apathetic, and you know, even will make such silly comments as, well, about those issues, I don't know and I don't care. Well, you know, it's the way our country's governed. And, you know, if you don't know and you don't care, somebody else who does know or care is going to make the decisions for you. Anyway, the lesson was that the good citizen would inform himself or herself of the issues of the day, and that the good citizen would then take a stand by joining a committee or joining a group, joining a party, participating. Well, that's exactly what Brad Love has done. Brad's a big reader. Brad's interested in the political issues of the country and of the province he lives in, of the city he lives in, and you can tell that from the letters he writes me, which I occasionally read on the air. But what has he gotten for that? Well, back in 2002, he was charged under Canada's notorious hate law. Well, what for? You know, when you hear the term hate law, you may have thoughts of, oh my God, what did he do? I'll tell you what he did. He wrote letters on immigration to to 20 politicians. Most of them members of the federal House of Commons, one the chief of police in York Region, and he was criticizing the rising crime rate, particularly in York Region, on third world immigration, much of it Jamaican gang related criminal activity. Well, he was charged under the hate law. Now, many things went wrong to launch Brad on the 15-year odyssey of persecution. For one thing, Brad was very badly advised by a lawyer. You see, in my submission, the hate law didn't even apply to Brad. I'll tell you why. The hate law reads, covers the willful promotion of hatred against privileged groups, you know, race, religion, sex, sexual orientation, etc., other than in private conversation. Well, a one-on-one letter to a politician is a private conversation, in my opinion. Anyway, Brad was very badly advised, and he was told, he was kept 4 months in prison. He could not get bail. Now, this in itself was extraordinary, and I don't think his lawyer fought very hard for him. Don't forget, this is a non-violent crime. You know, writing letters, for heaven's sakes. Anyway, Brad was, he made some mistakes, one of them being very impatient. Now, it's easy for me to say, oh, you should have just stayed in jail until your trial. Yeah, that's easy to say. Unfortunately, though, what with the lawyer not really fighting very hard for him, and his impatience, well, he was saying, Brad's a workaholic. And Brad said, you know, there I was in jail. My worldly goods had been piled up in a pyramid by my landlord, and he was about to put them out on the street. Now, I think there might have been alternatives to that. But anyway, he said, here, my bank account was dwindling. Anyway, his lawyer worked out a deal for him. Well, this was the deal. 18 months in prison. Now, this was the stiffest sentence ever handed down under the hate law. For actions which were not, in my opinion, even against the law. They were private communications. They were letters sent to elected members of parliament. Anyway, Brad, for speaking up, and when you think about it, the monstrousness of this, for speaking up and offering his opinion as a citizen, has a right to do, in fact, some would argue, has a duty to do. Because a participatory democracy, only a participatory government, whether it's in the form of a democracy or a republic, will only work with citizens who participate. Otherwise, you have an increasingly fragmented society where a minority can end up running the society. Those who are the most involved or people who can be made to be involved by perhaps selective advertising or ethnic organizing or whatever. A democracy, a participatory government only works if people participate. You know, that's axiomatic. If people do not participate, you end up with some other form of government. It may have the outward appearances of participatory democracy, participatory government, but the reality will be something different, and that's what we have in much of the Western world today. Even though there may be the forms of participatory government, there often is not the reality. We are elite or minority rule. Anyway, so Bradlaugh was off to prison for 18 months, and then he faced, I believe, 3 years of probation, during which he had a number of restrictions on him. One of the restrictions was that he was not allowed to write to any of the MPs that he'd written to the first time. Well, okay, I won't quibble. There might be some justification for that. However, he wrote to other members of Parliament, and he was charged, I think, maliciously for a breach of probation or breach of undertaking. He was kept in jail again, unable to get bail. He again, I think, made a big legal mistake. He made a deal. After 26 days, he was offered time served. Okay, sounds okay. Well, not okay, really, but problem was there were additional restrictions. Now he couldn't write to any elected person. Now, you remember, that's not North Korea. That's Canada. There's much more to the Bradlaugh story. But these type of escalating conditions went back and forth, and he is now free from them. But that took 15 years. But at one point, he was not allowed, as I mentioned a few moments ago, to write to any press organization or people, or any media, hello? Hi. No. No. No, I'm not. Okay, talk to you later. Sorry. Anyway, this is Paul Fromm here on the Fighting Side of Me. I'm going to play a little Hank Williams Jr. for my musical interlude.
We say man.
it by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a business man. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway night, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45. Cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hank Williams Jr. Hank Williams Jr.
I had some trouble with my sweetheart's paw on the work of the fat outlaw.
That's Hank Williams Jr. and the Tennessee Stud.
Finish off with the ballad of Hank Williams.
Don, tell us how it really was when you were working with Daddy.
Well, in 1950, I took a little ride along with Mr. Williams on the way to Mississippi. We were stacked 8 deep in a Packard limousine when we met this promoter in the town of New Orleans.
Well, a man told Daddy he had what it took, and he liked the way it sang, and he liked the way it shook.
He said pretty soon he'd make us all rich, and we started believing that.
Ballad of Hank Williams Sr. Kind of comical, probably the element of truth there. This is Plow's Problem. You're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow. Same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe, the dauntless hero, came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave, our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. Save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave